Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Welcome to episode 21 of the Webcomic Beacon. I'm Fess of Fessworks.com, and with me is Tanya.
Hello, hello.
Of Betapone.com, as well as Aaron.
Hello.
Of TBullComic.com. This week, it's the brainstorm session number 4 for developing a webcomic. I like these little brainstorm sessions, and I know some people don't particularly like these particular episodes, but I think it's important for people that have not that aren't very well versed in creating webcomics just yet, because you get a little bit of an idea about the different levels of how things can go when you're working on a new webcomic, especially as a team. And so I think it has a lot of worthwhile information, and it's just fun to listen to people talk about this and that. A couple of quick news before we get into that, though. I do want to mention the Comic Genesis Cookout, which is taking place in St. Louis. There's less than 30 days left to get your registration fee in for the event. But the actual cookout is on May 5th, so you got less than 2 months to get, you know, all your plans situated. But
soon.
Yes, get over there soon and start submitting your fee, getting your hotel registration, and seeing what up and what you can do. If you don't know about transportation, go onto the forum and see if there's anybody you can carpool with, or if there's anybody you can split a room with. You can go to cookout.comicgenesis.com for the details. One other little bit quick of news. Well, it's more like a... Okay, I'm trying to get somebody on the show. I'm not going to say who, because I don't say who unless I actually have them confirmed. I did send him an email, and he said it would be cool. I sent him another email. It's been a while, so I'm not sure if he's changed his mind or whatnot. But if you still listen to this show, hey, if you can do anything... at any point, check your emails. Maybe it's in your spam or whatever. and give me a write back. See if you're still interested. And on that note, we're going to start off with the brainstorm panel, starting off with Eric.
Oh, hi. My name's Eric, also known as Dramos. I do Xern.com. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. And also with us is Tomcat.
Hello, hello, and along with Darren Brown, I am one half of the creative team of Crossworlds over at crossworlds.ws.
Thanks for coming. And Gothia?
Hey, this is Gothia, also known as Aggie. I work on American Gothic Daily. I'm currently doing an art swap with Rander of ROCR.net, and that's about all I know.
Well, alrighty then. Welcome to the show. Eric, why don't you take us off on this incredible journey?
Well, okay. Previously on our other brainstorming sessions, we started talking about creating a webcomic, or actually any story idea. It doesn't have to be restricted to webcomic. In the first session, we started brainstorming place, setting, central idea. We came up with the idea of a detective story with our waitress detective, who we eventually named Bridget, I believe. And we had set it in Chicago during the night. What was the date, Tom?
1920s.
I'm sorry, my brain is only half here tonight, so I will need reminders. And that was our first brainstorming session. The next two brainstorming sessions, we started talking about characters, nailing down some of our main characters, and we had Bridget Pauline, who was our main waitress detective. We had Detective Murphy, and then a cast of other characters to fill out our cast. That's where we've gotten to this point. Now we're at the point where we actually have to start thinking about the story. We've touched on this a little bit, but we're hoping in this session to hammer out something that would be a little more concrete that we could start writing on. So that is where we were. Does anyone have anything they want to add about that, what we've done?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yep. Okay. So now comes the hard part. We have to actually come up with a story. We have to come up with some way of actually creating a narrative out of these characters and out of this setting. And we've said that this is going to be a detective story. So here we are. What do we want to do with these characters?
Well, let me correct something, because we don't just have to come up with stories. We have to come up with stories. We have to think beyond this one, and we have to start dropping hints for what happens in the second and the third and fourth story here. I mean, the first story should always be an introductory story, you know, something simple, more to get to know the characters rather than anything that's big involved. But we have to have the seeds of the future planted here as well.
Yep.
So
we've sort of decided that we're going to have a serial with a larger narrative sort of tying things together. If you think about this in TV form, we're having a season with the large narrative going out throughout the season, and each set of individual stories running within it as an episode.
But exactly. And we're going to have, if I remember correctly, we're going to have a bit of a sharing.
Well,
one of the things that we narrated by Murphy himself, even though our main character is Bridget.
One of the things that we do need to kind of hash out first, though, is we have developed the characters, the main characters, but we never really developed our villains. And to really be able to even write the story, we do need to figure out, you know, who's going to be our villain. Because as you say, our first story, we'd like something kind of simple. And we know that we wanted like an arch nemesis who would go through, you know, as each story progresses and gets more and more in depth and in detail, but this character starts coming out more. We did discuss that before, but boy, we never did develop anything for that person.
No, we haven't. And the villain, I found the villains are always the most important thing. If you enjoy your villain, the story is a lot easier. So who or what is the opposition?
1920 Chicago, it has to be a gangster mob. Maybe not the mob boss himself, but maybe one of his lieutenants or one of the ones who watches over one of the districts in Chicago.
Right.
It has to, I mean, with that time period and that placement, it has to be a mob boss. It has to be that mob tie-in somehow.
Okay, so is that our main villain, or is that the episode villain?
Here's my idea on this. We can base it off of mob characters of the time, of course, but none of these people are going to actually be involved with this, basically, because it seems like we want to go the realistic route for fact-checking and whatnot. So perhaps like a lieutenant or whatever. But the quote-unquote main antagonist of both the detective and Bridget, our main characters, basically, I don't think would end up showing up until maybe either the end of the first or the end of the second episode.
What we need is a Moriarty. I mean, they're not at that level, but we need someone in the background manipulating, whose presence can be felt by things that are done.
Right. Like some of the peons are going to be the ones that are going to be interacting in the first and possibly the second one before we start seeing more of this character, because he's in charge of all these other, you know, basically the peons, and
but we still need a structure of peons,
right?
here's the thing about a Moriarty. I almost think having a Moriarty be a mob boss sort of cheapens him a little bit.
As someone from the time period, Al Capone. Al Capone was involved with everything, but never got caught, was never on the scene. Yeah. He manipulated from the background, and what did they finally get him on? They got him on tax evasion, because they could never get the proof they needed.
Right.
So that's what we need. We need someone there who can't get high into the mob without having some brains. This someone should be an up-and-comer.
Yeah,
He's never going to be able to take the place of a Capone, because we know how history pans out. He'll probably be taken out long after the comic ends, but he should be someone who is a threat.
See, here's the thing, and I mean, this is just my own personal preference for villains. I like the villain that sort of is very arrogant in his own right, and It just seems that the infighting, the sort of typical mob family, you know, the organization of it would chase a Moriarty sort of character. It would be having to actually listen to someone else would bother him. And this is just how I personally feel on it.
I think about this, again with the time period. World War One hasn't ended that long ago. Maybe our lieutenant was someone who spent some time in the military fighting in the trenches, so he doesn't mind taking orders that he sees the purpose for. He doesn't mind working his way up the ranks because he knows what the eventual goal is going to be.
Right.
Now, he'll go through and he'll do some double dealings and some dirty deals behind the back when he knows he can't be caught, but he's got to be smart about it.
Can I propose something that might be a little cliched here? What about having a woman as a villain? We have a woman as our...
That's a good idea.
I was thinking the same thing, and I think it would be really interesting to see, like, an Al Capone's girlfriend. The one who played the big cheeses. I think that would be kind of interesting and fun. It would take really skillful writing, though.
Yeah, it would. You would have to have, skillful writing. But if we are totally going Sherlock Holmes, if that's the path we are going to take, then having the villain be a woman as well, sort of, having the dark reflection of it. I kind of like that idea.
A Bonnie Parker.
In the era, you just have to have her working through a man, though.
Yeah, like the girlfriend of, like, a lieutenant, maybe.
She's really pulling the strings, but everyone thinks it's him. Otherwise, nobody's taking orders from a woman. So.
Yeah, well, we have Bridget working through the detective, and we have our villain working through the mob. Neither of which are main characters. I mean, our villain be a showgirl or something along that line of just manipulating these mobs.
Oh, yeah.
I think they just dropped out there a moment because I got absolutely for about a 5 minute stint there.
Yeah,
my phone went completely dead. I heard nothing.
In fact, I mean, that could be our big clue. I mean, one of our subtle clues is we'll have the store owner complaining to Murphy in the diner. Murphy's getting a cup of coffee. The store owner sees him, comes in, starts complaining. We can have Bridget ask the store owner, oh, by the way, do you happen to have the time? He brings up his arm, and we see the nice new gold watch there.
That's great. Shiny.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's good. We got to take a quick little break right now, though.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you guys on the other side.
The Webcomic Beacon is an affiliate of The Geek Media. The Geek Media has a number of geek-related podcasts, blogs, and videos for you to enjoy. Check out thegeekmedia.com. Have news, milestones, questions, or comments? Send your audio clips or email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
The stated reason why we're here is to show people how to come up with a story by actually going through a story instead of, you know, saying, well, you should really think of this, you should really think of this, you should really think
right.
of this
yeah.
to actually do it. Now, personally, I think it's having fun. And that's,
oh, it is fun,
And the whole teaching people is a horrible, horrible lie.
You can lead by example.
That's actually why I'm having you guys on the show.
Yeah,
is the teaching people portion is
yeah,
because people will learn from this.
Yep.
And oh, by the way, we're back.
Great.
And the thing is.
Sly.
The thing is that a lot of people, when they start their comics, they're just like, oh, I'm going to start a webcomic, woohoo. But there are a few people that actually want to start a webcomic with some sort of like story, some sort of like continuous thing, some idea. And really, if you're listening, this is what you got to do. You got to develop your characters. You got to plot out some stories, some ideas. You got to have an outline, an idea in your mind of what you want to go down the path. If you seriously want to do a webcomic that's good, that's going to have a lot of story elements. Granted, there are some comics out there that are just random, gag-a-day things. You know, fine, whatever. But if you're really wanting to do something with a story to it, there's a lot of stuff to do before you start. And this is what we're doing.
Otherwise, you get a quarter way through, you bog down, and you quit.
You go on a path, and you don't know where it's going, and eventually you're going to find at least a dead end.
Yeah.
Or you find that you have to.
Right, by plotting everything out ahead of time, even if you don't have to have everything down in script format from here to year 3000, but if you have your overwhelming outline, your plot outline, and then you have your individual plot lines, and you work everything together, that gives you more of a direction, more of a focus as to where to go, even though things may change.
Well, you have to be really, really careful, because it sounds like, oh, it would never happen, but there's so many people end up doing reloads because they didn't just pay attention to where, and led themselves right down into a hole.
Yep.
Or, I mean, which is even more common, is the hiatus based on story because they can't think of what to do next. And I support the art hiatus. Sometimes it's just hard to draw, but you should never say, I can't think of what to write next. that's not a good thing.
Set up a foundation, you know, or enough of a world. Or you're Tanya.
When Darren and I started Crossworld, we actually had a two-year plan because we knew what we wanted to do within the two-year plan. We had our big, what I call an umbrella arc, our overreaching arc, which covers everything. Then we had our miniature arcs, which were going to take one or two issues, which we could drop hence. And then we had our issues, which could be either part of the overwhelming arc or part of the individual, so that we had our plan. And then as we get closer to 2 years, we'll have more of a foundation which to build, and then we can do another two-year plan.
Yeah. Xeran has the next 2 years scripted out, has the ending planned and the basic outline for the entire story done, and that was done after the third comic. I just knew I needed that, so, yeah.
Well, Gothia, what about you? Since we're talking about our comics and how we sometimes plan ahead.
Well, I wrote mine as a romance novel first. I have a, you know, 360-page novel that I need to actually go back and rewrite and try to get ready for publishing.
Oh, wow.
But I wrote it almost 3 years ago now.
And that's what you're basing the comic off of?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. I started off doing a little bit of fan fiction, you know, just because I was at a change in my hobbies. I had wanted to do comics, you know, as a teen, and I gave up that dream, quit reading comics, you know, stopped buying them, stopped collecting them, and I was in, you know, doing different things in life, and then I went back into it, and I really love paranormal romance, and so I started writing them, and I really do need to get it published. But yeah, American Gothic Daily is based off of a full novel. It's
the whole
comic is planned out for the next 5 years.
Oh jeez!
So.
I don't even write to the next week on mine.
and it's kind of funny because you know, I am doing an art exchange right now with someone. I've been doing his comic art since February, and he's doing mine, and we'll trade scripts, and I give him, like, you know, here's 2 months worth. He's like, you make me mad. So, this is how it goes.
Back to us. I mean, I saw our umbrella arc as being our mob princess, culminating at the very end with the killing of the lieutenant. And she goes off she goes away. I mean, Moriarty was never caught. Forget Rickenbach Falls. So at the end of the Umbrella arc is where the Lieutenant story ends, but hers continues. And then we fit our minor plots, our minor arcs after there.
Sorry. Okay. You totally changed tracks on us and got us back to what we were talking about before.
Right. I thought it was good background. I thought it was good background.
Your focus completely threw me off here.
Okay, so this little boy.
What we were talking about.
We were talking about, plotting out. So for, let's say for 2 years. For 2 years we'll have a story. The overwhelming arc, the Umbrella arc, is going to be the mob princess manipulating the lieutenant, the mob lieutenant, her husband. Mm-hmm. And that culminates, after the 2 years, it culminates in his death. And
well, I think the main arc here, we have these two characters who have, essentially, both have a muscle. We have the princess having her husband, and we have Bridget having Murphy. And both of these, in our first arc, the people in peril are going to be in the muscles. They are the if you're thinking in your chess game, they are the pawns in front. And they are the ones that are going to be in danger. And I think once Bridget and our princess sort of ID one another as dangers, just from thinking about it, the princess, the first thing she would try to do is drive a wedge between Murphy and Bridget. I mean, that is the way you neutralize Bridget, is by taking away her muscle.
She doesn't know. On the overwhelming arc, we need for the first arc, the first Umbrella arc, to be concentrating. Lieutenant is the bad guy. Mob Lieutenant is the bad guy. Yeah. He's the one that everybody looks at. Bridget doesn't realize that it's the princess, his wife, that's actually the one behind it until later, towards the end of the arc. So we need to look at him, at the lieutenant, not as a pawn, more as a rook. Yeah. Plenty of power, but is used rather sparingly. Not as out front as a pawn, but still enough in there to make appearance and get himself noticed. But it's actually the princess that's the real power behind it.
Yeah, I think it would be a clever bit of writing if we could somehow allow Bridget to say, this lieutenant's not the real danger here, and to have her say it, but to have it said in a way that's not particularly believed by the reader. So that she can do the foreshadowing for us, and then when it actually happens, they say, oh, wow, she's really smart. She figured that out way back here.
Yeah.
Remember, one of the things was Moriarty was smarter than Holmes. We need for Bridget to be thinking. Maybe it's the killing of the lieutenant himself. They get the search warrant, they break into his house, ready to arrest him, Murphy working with the feds, because the local cops won't do it. And they find him dead by poisoning. And she's playing the good little bereaved wife, but it's Bridget who spots something that lets her know that the princess is the actual person behind it, not the lieutenant. The lieutenant was killed to throw people off the track.
Yes. Now, but here's the thing.
Him being the villain. Forget the princess for the first arc. Making a few appearances, but it needs to be the lieutenant who appears to be the bad guy, and we need to write him as if he is the main bad guy.
Yeah. Right.
I agree that we do have to write him as the main bad guy, but I'm just talking about Bridget. Bridget's position, the Holmes analogy breaks down when you start to think about the relative power of our two characters, because Bridget has a very tenuous power. Her power is simply through a friendship with a detective who she is manipulating, and is who the detective, as soon as he figures out she's manipulating him, that relationship breaks down quite quickly. Our princess is rich, she is connected,
there is nothing you can do to take away her power easily. And so it's one of these things, if we say the princess is smarter than Bridget and more powerful, we have a real problem in the story because there's no logical reason for the princess to lose at that point. I mean,
stories are made away from logic. It's going to be something else. Maybe the princess doesn't see Bridget as that much of a threat. She's in a, whatever. It's going to be Murphy. It's the same thing. It's not Bridget who's going to be the one who's doing everything. It's Murphy. So the princess is going to be concentrating on Murphy. At the end, where it's Bridget that sees something about the princess that makes her realize that we can have the same thing happen. It's the princess at the end that realizes that it's Bridget who's been the power behind the throne there. And it's going to take a while for her to build up her power again because her, really, the princess's main power came from two things, her father and her husband. Yeah. The father will still be there. The husband is gone, so there goes her major power. It's not until she can get somebody else to work through that she starts to build her power base again.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In plotting, if I was plotting this out for myself, I would keep Bridget and the princess out of the same room for as long as humanly possible.
Oh,
just to keep them away from each other. And I would have Bridget be saying, there's something else, there's someone else behind this, there's something else going on. You know, Bridget knowing that this is not doesn't smell right from very early on, but no one really believing her.
Well, really, there is no reason for our mob princess to ever be in a diner during the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite honestly, a mob princess character, I really don't see her going into a diner ever.
But what if she suspects
something?
Bridget
in the evening might go into a nightclub, but I really don't see the princess going into the diner.
Okay, well, here on that idea, I guess the idea was which one of the girls finds out first about the other one? And I guess that's kind of what
finds out first because she can find out about the princess through a newspaper story, through a photograph, through stories that are told, through something that's overheard.
Okay.
The princess isn't going to care about that stuff. But Bridget is the one. I mean, the princess is smarter, per se. Bridget is more observant. That's why Holmes always beat Moriarty. Not because he was smarter, but because he was more observant and deduced more than Moriarty did.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, see, the way I would have it play out is I would have Bridget very, very early on figure out that there is a Moriarty, but not know who it is. And I would have the princess actually figure out who Bridget is first. Because that could create a lot of dramatic tension. And I think that would be sort of our middle act of, you know, the princess IDing Bridget. Because that's when things would start to go really bad.
Right, it would accelerate very quickly.
That will cause a major shift, and again, that's a great thing for at the end of the arc, at the end of the Umbrella arc, because at that's where everything's going to definitely go downhill quickly. I mean, we can have a shootout at the diner, killing everybody except Bridget, who just happened to be off that day. Bad luck, where everyone else, including our kid who got saved in the first story, gets killed.
Oh, jeez.
Nice.
Hey, I'm vicious.
You know what? It's good writing. Vicious or not, that's, you know, it's an emotional impact, and without an emotional impact, people won't read. So.
Well, it also goes through and it cuts all the emotional ties, because Bridget is safe right now. Diner is low-key. She's in a comfort zone, so she's able to take this. If we got rid of the comfort zone, she's going to have to be a little more aggressive. She's going to have to be a little more risk-taking. She's going to have to be a little more forthright.
Yeah.
And it may also accelerate some sort of relationship between her and Murphy.
Yeah.
So this would be a big change in the comic when this comes around. No longer stealthy and reserved. The whole gameplay would have to drastically change after this particular
point. And this is our point of character development. I mean, this is the point where Bridget, we are portraying up until this point, is sort of shy. You know, sort of likes to stay in her comfort zone, doesn't like to stray outside of the places she knows. She's very intelligent, very observant, can figure most things out, but is also loves the background. And at this moment, you can have her arc is to have her change from someone who stays in the background to someone who takes a much more aggressive and forward role in things.
And the first arc, she's not going to grow emotionally. She's not going to grow in the character that much. She's going to be background. There may be a little bit of relationship growing between her and Murphy. Mm-hmm. But she's really not going to change that much during the first arc.
And yeah, the first arc is Murphy's arc. I mean, it really sounds like we're really putting the screws on Murphy, because we're starting off with Murphy by the book, and we keep on throwing things at Murphy that challenges this by the book perception, you know, and so we're focusing on Murphy to begin with, but yeah.
I think we got a very strong looking outline right here, and we are going to have to wrap it up, though. Is there anything last on this that anybody wants to go over real quick?
Absolutely, yes. One of the things that I like to do, especially with historical pieces like this, is I'm a researcher at heart, so I like to go through things like pictures of old Chicago, slang. I mean, if you talk about somebody being swell, what are you talking about? They're okay. Well, back in the 20s, swell meant they were a fancy dresser. So
right.
By getting the period down, by getting the slang down, by getting the dressing down, if you have someone walk through with a seersucker suit in the 1920s, that'll look fine. But if they go through with a pair of Nikes and a running outfit, that I don't care how good they draw it, that's wrong. So research the time period. Or if you do a science fiction or fantasy one, get your continuity down visually as well as character-wise. Otherwise, you're going to have something that just stands out like a red herring in neon orange with 15-foot flaming letters that says, wrong.
Hey, guys, question, Murphy, do you got glasses or not?
I mean, if you call Murphy a dick, you're not insulting him. That's what he is.
That's exactly what he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, Dick is 1920s slang for a detective. We are not using profanity, people.
Yeah. Well, okay, go ahead.
I think Tom's exactly right. We've got an outline. We've got characters. We've got an idea of where we go. The next thing you've got to do is go to the library or hit Google really hard. You've got to know what you're talking about before you go any further, because otherwise you are just going to get yourself in so much trouble.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I really want to know, does Murphy have glasses or not?
What?
No. I didn't think
Murphy
that he did.
Glasses or not?
Murphy needs to be the stereotypical. The look, it needs to be stereotypical square-jawed hero. No glasses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Goggles?
Serious.
Goggles, no.
Goggles.
All right.
But we talk. I sit here and sketch. You know, I mean, my first instinct as a penciler is while everyone's sitting here talking about these characters, I'm sitting here sketching. So I've got Murphy drawn, and on my last thing, I'm like, well, does he wear glasses or not? So,
all right.
So next time we get together, do we want to talk about more about design and maybe have some character sketches ready for next time?
Absolutely. I think that would be a good place to go. Talk about design, research, you know, getting photographs, that sort of thing, and a couple of other functional parts of making a webcomic. We're going to have to sort of, we should talk about this offline, about where we want to go from here.
Right.
Because our initial premise was to brainstorm a story, and we've brainstormed a story. So...
Now we need to not just brainstorm the story, we need to brainstorm the series.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think next time talking a little bit about character sketches, about researching, is a good place to start talking for this.
That sounds great. And on that note, I want to thank everybody on the brainstorming panel for coming with us once again. Go through the list. We got Eric here of Xern.com.
Thank you.
We have Tom of crossroads.ws.
Thank you. And if I may say one last thing, for people who are going to be in the Philadelphia area at the end of May, both me and Darren Brown are supposed to be having a table in the Artist Alley at Woodson World, Philadelphia. Stop by and see us.
Me too. I'm going to be there too.
Alrighty. Send me an email. I'll put that in the show links. And Gothia is from AmericanGothic.comicsgenesis.com.
Yep.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We're going to hear hopefully a We're going to hear a webcomic impression for sure, hopefully a review. We'll see you on the other side.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted by Zephyr.net, free hosting for free thinkers. Be sure to check out our weekly live broadcast on TalkShoe.com. Listen in, chat, or call in at webcomicbeacon.com/live. And now, Mark Savory with a webcomic review.
Hello, Mark Savory here with a webcomic review. This week, I want to share with you a nice and rather interesting little project by Turner and Bothma, namely, a long-form story about relationships called True Loves 2. The comic is a sort of series of vignettes, each one a step further along in the development of the story, almost like mini-chapters. The story itself is about a 20-something couple who have been together for about a year and starts when they've just moved in together. The humor is subtle. It's not gag-a-day or in-your-face type stuff. It's much more sublime and makes the cast of characters that much more realistic. The couple consists of True, who runs a small shop downtown, and her boyfriend Zonder, who is the night manager of a grocery store. Between them and their friends, the storyline covers many basic relationship issues, slices of everyday life, and ultimately, it's about people becoming grown-ups. There's a lot to like here. The artwork is all done in what appears to be ink and brush or a brush pen, everything in a heavy ink line but with some variation. It lends a sort of hand-drawn look and feel to the panels. The work has a professional vibe to it, despite the almost complete lack of perfectly straight lines. This isn't a scribble comic. You can tell that this is a style. The artist knows what he's doing and has deliberately chosen this style for his rendering. And there's such a wonderful sense of color in this one, perfectly matching the illustration style of the line work. For all its apparent, even deceptive simplicity, there's something gorgeous at work here in the coloring. And the panels themselves, they're more than just a way to go from box to box to box. The artist has what I would call a unique layout for his project. The panels don't just sit side by side, so many to a row, like the Sunday Funnies or a comic book page or similar things we're all used to. Instead, Turner and Bothma have deliberately placed the panels in each installment in a sort of informal staggered column down the page. Now, what I like about this, and what really struck me as clever, is that this layout not only helps tell the story, but actually affects the timing of the dialogue. At the same time, it doesn't interfere with reading the comic at all. Gaps between panels just feel right as you read the dialogue, as if there were natural lulls or silences in the characters' conversations. The story is probably a PG-13, as there are some not infrequent uses of herbal essences, but that just seems to fit the characters, their age, where they are in the world, their friends, and so forth. It's a modern story, and an urban story, but mostly, it's just about people. And ancient or modern, urban or rural, some truths about relationships stay the same wherever you go. True Loves 2 is a weekly. It's updated every Thursday, so if you get hooked on this one, you'll no doubt find a little pain there as you eagerly await the next installment. Still, I think this is one that's certainly worth it. So do check it out at serializer.net/comics/trueloves.php. I'm Mark Savory, and until we meet again, take care.
For more from Mark, visit autumnlake.com. Time for a quick webcomic impression from Peter Tarkalich.
With the saturation of webcomics on the net, finding one with both an original story and an original art style is pretty tough. So let me save you the trouble. Direct your browser to www.royalbirdbath.com and check out the comic Everything Goes. Everything Goes, written and drawn by Amelia Davis, is a story of vampires, werewolves, and magic, all in an urban setting. If you're familiar with the webcomic Sorcery 101, it's kind of like that, but much more lighthearted. While the subjects of vampires, werewolves, and magic aren't in themselves original, it's the way that Amelia presents them that is. The plot still seems to be slowly unfolding, but her characters are fun to read about. Yes, even the dark and brooding vampire Derek, who is rarely seen without a box of cookies in his hands. Amelia's art style is the real draw here, though. In the relatively short time she's been posting, her line art and coloring skills have been improving greatly, and that's saying a lot because she started off pretty strong. My only advice, and it's minor because she hasn't done this in a while, would be that she stay away from the anime-style tricks, like the big frustration vein and the tiny pupils-only eyes when a character is exasperated. The site, having recently been moved from Comic Genesis and redesigned, is easy to navigate and easy on the eyes. The graphics definitely reflect Amelia's style, enhancing the overall experience of the webcomic. Once again, it's called Everything Goes and can be found at www.royalbirdbath.com. Catch you next time for another webcomic impression.
For more from Peter, visit bardsworth.com.
Anyway, we're back and Tanya's gone. And let's see what we got here. We have, well, Tanya's busy. Well, if she has no time for us.
She's building a hovercraft out of her headset.
Oh, well, if that's what she's doing. we got a few milestones I want to hit up right away. This week. Okay, well, coming soon. Let's just say coming soon, because I'm not sure. DMFA, Dan and Mab's Furry Adventures at MissMab.com will be hitting 900 strips soon. I think they're at 895 right now. There's also a side story comic that she's been doing that's like over 120 strips as well. So as part of her world, it's already over 1,000. Though I do want to give my condolences to Amber, because recently she's run into some trouble with. She used to be in America, and now she's moved to Canada, and she's having some issues with that. And recently, her dad passed away of a heart attack, I think. So that's at missmab.com. I'm not sure what's going to be going on with that, but Amber, good luck. So, moving on to a couple other milestones. Last week, the Kamics at drunkduck.com/the_Kamics hit 800 strips the other week, so congratulations. Another webcomic, Here There Be Dragons, has hit 200 mm-hmm. strips.
Great!
I don't know the URL.
It's bdragons.com, bedragons.com.
There's another webcomic called Neo Earth, which just hit 1 year.
Yes.
I don't know the URL. Look for our show notes. And also another one that I have no idea. Oh, yeah. Stud Kickass, apparently, has hit 100 strips. Don't know the URL. Yay. We'll get that in the show notes. Another bit of advice, another bit of news here. Not advice, news. News. We have some words from Strip Fight. I'm going to see if we can get this guy on to actually record him because...
Yes.
But in case I can't, I'm going to put it in the show right here. Stripfight.org bringing you the weekly ringside update. Last week's round 153 was a dish best served cold. In that round, Miko showed that you can never trust a talking seal. Vince preferred his revenge with a little heat, while Aaron would rather serve up some leftover pizza pie. There's no soup for Tim. He likes his food cubed. And all we have four contenders. They had four contenders, and the highest average score was 2.88 out of 5. Vince of Beebleville.com was the winner. This week's round 154, Gas Giants, is going on now. Go and vote for your favorite strip. Next round, 155, Green Monster still has a few days left before the bell rings on April 28th. Get those entries in. Stripfight.org. May the best comic win.
Did he write that for you?
No, I constructed a layout, and then he mixed it up, so we kind of wrote it together.
That is excellent.
Do you realize how awesome it sounds now that you've actually prepared it?
That's so
cool.
It's
a lot better. Yeah, I kind of came up with a layout, and then he's adding to it, and I'm going to really try to get him to go on. I'll be like, I don't care if y'all like don't like your voices or whatever. I hate my voice, but I have one thing on my side. Equalizer.
I'm a cheater.
I'm a cheater. I hate my really freaking gay nerdy voice.
I hate my voice too. It doesn't matter.
Your voice sounds better. I'd rather have your voice.
Oh, here we go.
Anyway,
now we're getting down to the real psychological problems here.
I wish I had a vagina.
And again, we're back to boobies.
Oh, no! No!
What?
No!
You're going to have to wait, listen for it in the show. No.
What?
Some additional news. Well, there isn't any. Next
God
week.
God damn it.
Next week, we are going to be talking. We're going to be broadcasting the show on April 27th at 2 p.m. We're going to start doing the broadcast 2 p.m. Central. That's -6 GMT. We're going to start off with a guest. Shoot, I forget his name. But remember the guest strip project that we were talking about before? We're going to be having him on the show. Tanya, you have to be there because he really wants you to be there as well because you were so nice for pimping the project out in the first place. We're going to be talking with him a little bit. And then after that, we're going to be rolling into Grayscale versus Black and White versus Color Comics. We're going to be talking about some of the comics of these various types that we like, why they should be done in a different style, if any, and what's wrong with one or the other subject. We hope to get a lot of people in on this, and it's going to be recorded on Sunday afternoon, so there should be no excuse for some of you people out there who have not been participating in our show. Like I said, I mean, look at Aaron. Look at this pitiful Aaron. I mean, I'm just kidding. He was like, I'm just kidding. He was the only person who came on to our call-in shows, and look, now he's a freaking co-host. So
yeah, he's a go-getter.
So if you particularly like Black and White, or if you hate Black and White, or if you like color or hate color, get on there and defend your side, because I'm sure there's going to be lots of trash talk.
Yeah, and let me just start one off. Deaddays.net. Was it Deaddays.net? Uh-huh.
Yes.
Stop doing it in grayscale. Put color, do it in black and white, or put color to it, because grayscale, to me, it just makes me really look boring. It looks like you make it in color and then you make it grayscale. That's what it looks like. I think it could be punched up.
Black and white set.
Yeah, it could be punched up a lot better if it was in color. I'm just going to throw that out there. If you're listening, you can say something back. There's a few others out there. Some people can pull off a really good black and white, grayscale, and color, but there's some people that really should be doing it in a different style.
I'll email him and see if he'll show up on Sunday.
No, I want to see if he's just listening to the show at all.
I just want to say, like, if you can't do your black and white like Oddfish, you probably shouldn't be doing black and white.
Oh,
damn!
I do want to mention one webcomic that I've come across recently. I want to get some more news into the show and some like what's going on type of thing. And one of the things that I finally started reading, I finally got through all the archives, is ZebraGirl.keenspot.com.
That is beautiful.
That is a crazy, crazy. Well, it's technically grayscale, but you know it's
yeah.
It's got very a well lot done. Of freaking detail, and all I have to say is, like, I wish this thing was in color.
It really reminds me of Vertigo comics in the writing and the look of a lot of the Vertigo series.
But, you know, this is one webcomic which has just a whole bunch of different things to it. It starts off a little kind of like maybe he didn't have really that much of long-term plans to it, so it's kind of a little bit more loose, and then it really starts to develop, and then it's like one of those comics where you're like, this is good. Why aren't you updating anymore? Update faster. So check it out, and then bother him to update more. Or I know some people have been thinking about going back to the old style where he didn't do a whole page at a time. He did, like, strips at a time. I don't know, whatever. Update more. I really like it.
Whatever you have to do.
I mean, it's no wonder that he's on Keenspot. All you gotta do is look at his art. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people on Keenspot are there because they're in the top tier, you know.
It's also good writing as well, I think.
Oh, yeah.
What about you guys? Any webcomics that you guys recently hit up?
I've been busy starting a business, so sorry.
I went back and read a bunch of TNT recently. TNTcomic.net.
All right.
Yeah.
Crap, hilarious. And he actually, I was posting a comment on his, and he actually made another comic based on the comment that I made.
Nice.
And I'll go back and find it really quick. You guys will die when you read it. It's freaking hilarious.
Is it better than when Evil Couch takes a screenshot of something he posted in the forum and makes that his comic?
Almost. It's hard to beat that, I'll be honest, because he's done that to me too. So I just gotta. He updates. TNT updates a lot.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to keep up with his comics. I don't know how he does this many.
Well, maybe he has a business plan.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be the new excuse for big failure.
I can't update more. I don't have a business plan.
Oh.
Definitely. Next week we already have that set. The episodes after that, I don't have anything wedged out as much yet. Like I said, there's somebody I've been contacting to try to do an interview, and one show is kind of dependent upon whether or not he gets back to me in time. So that's one. I guess I could say the possible theme it might be related to, and it would be adult webcomics. But it's but whether or not that one happens in May is dependent on if we can get him in for an interview. Another thing we want to do next month is going to be starting off our webcomic community showcases, which we will be starting off with the webcomic list forums, which is an exception to the rules of where I'm going to be going with this first, since this is where the webcomic beacon spawned from. But after this particular episode, I don't know how often we're going to be doing them, but we're going to be looking at like small groups of webcomics that band together for something and then talk about the individual comics that they're related to. And along the way, we'll also talk about webcomic communities such as webcomic host sites like Comic Genesis and Drunk Duck, and even some other art forums such as the Hyatt Art Forums and others. On that note, I think we really should get out of here.
Yeah.
It is getting late, right. And the janitor is outside the door telling us to get the hell out. So,
I have hovercrafts to build.
This has been the Webcomic Beacon, episode 21. I'm Fess.
I'm Tanya.
I'm Aaron.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.
Call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message
system. Yes. 1-0-8. Leave him a message. Hi, this is Fess of the Webcomic Beacon. We're leaving you a message, and quit hanging up on us.